Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And this is a mini episode, a special Friday edition.
Mm-hmm.
We're sorry that we didn't put out the episode on Thursday as we typically do. It was just Madigan was going to come over on Tuesday night and the midterm results were coming in. And I was kind of like, I don't feel like we should talk about this while it's still happening because we won't be able to give you guys all of the information.
Right.
And then we weren't able to meet on Wednesday. So I was like, you know what? Let's just put it out a day late.
Yeah. My friend was like, I'm having withdrawals.
Oh, like, no. Sorry. It's coming. Don't worry.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to make sure that we had all the information. And actually, I think it's a really good thing that we waited so that we could kind of process what happened on Tuesday. So for those of you who are not American, it was our midterm elections. So we all showed up to the polls and voted. It was said to be one of the most important elections that have happened in recent history. And there were record numbers of people who turned out to vote.
Oh, the lines in LA were crazy.
I went before work because I had an idea that the lines were going to be long after work. And even going before work, I was kind of surprised by the number of people there. I've never had to wait.
Oh, the one that I went to was like, I think it was like a restaurant or something. I was like, what is this? It was like right next to my new apartment. And there was only a couple other people there. And I had filled out my mailing ballot and just dropped it off.
Right.
So I didn't have to wait at all. And it was great. I enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Good way to do it.
Yeah. It made me feel very good that there were a lot of people there. There were quite a lot of young people there.
Yeah.
I think people in LA become really complacent, thinking that they don't need to vote for one reason or another. But actually, it's really important that you vote, if for nothing else, even if you're in a blue state, if for nothing else, then just to have the numbers, right? Like, you just want those numbers to be out there.
And then you can know that you've done something.
Right.
You don't have to have it be in anyone else's hands.
I know it's been said to death, but, like, seriously, I don't want to hear you complaining about shit if you didn't turn up to vote.
Yeah,
I really
for
don't.
Real.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about Tuesday night.
Uh-huh.
I will say, as I told you, my dumbass accidentally
I love this.
Bought the same red wine that I was drinking during the 2016 election. It's a Ménage à Trois Silk. It is delicious, which is why I keep buying it.
But you're like, why did I do this?
But I was having so many sensory, like, responses to...
Yes.
Because when I turned on the TV...
I was having, like, flashbacks.
I was having hardcore flashbacks. And listen, I don't want to say it like this because I understand that this is not what this is. Don't get it confused. I understand that this is not what this is. But I've heard it referred to it this way in several places. And it's kind of the first thing that popped into my mind when my friend told me that she was, like, freaking out about the election. I was like, I think we all have... election PTSD.
Yeah.
I think we have...
Oh, I was talking about that with my boss, too. We both just, like, kept having to take little breaks. Like,
we have trauma.
Watching it was like, oh, God, I can't.
Yeah, I
can't
think
go
we're,
through this again.
I think we're suffering trauma.
Well, every time I saw another Republican being voted in,
it was terrifying.
Oh,
it was terrifying. So, when I first started watching, the map was pretty red.
Yeah.
Which, again, reminded me of 2016.
Yeah.
The map being very red.
And thinking, oh, it's going to change. It's going to change.
Right.
And just
didn't. Drinking my red wine, watching the map turn red. The projections, this is in my notes. The projections had me fucked up, okay? So when I first started watching, the projections had it to where the Republicans were in the lead to take the House.
Yeah.
And at one point, Nate Silver, who's the one who famously in 2016 was like, listen, Hillary's going to win by like 85%, right?
Yeah.
Nate Silver at one point had to get on there and be like, yo, our model's like soup sensitive, so don't lose your fucking shit yet. Like, he was like, our model that's set to track who's going to win at the end of this is just being really, really sensitive. So at one, but like, he's like, don't. He didn't say that, but he was like, don't lose your shit. And I was like, it's a little late. I'm already losing my shit.
We don't trust you anymore, dude.
I don't. And at one, because at one point it was predicting that the Democrats had like a 34% chance of winning, of taking the House.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, what if?
I know. I know.
What if we don't take anything?
I know.
I was like so fucking panicked
I know.
About it. And in the end, we can restore our faith in Nick Silver a little bit because
we took the House.
We took the House, and he had predicted that we would take the House, but not the Senate.
Yeah.
So that is what happened. And while I know people were somewhat disappointed because they thought, like, it's this blue wave and we're going to fucking decimate everything and we're going to crush everything, and that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to remember how amazing it is that we took the House. It's amazing.
So now that the Democrats have the House, Republicans will no longer be able to pass legislation without GOP votes, with GOP votes alone. If any bills get through Congress, Trump will have to spar the Democrats. And Democrats will also have subpoena power, which will help them investigate the Trump administration.
Yes. Okay, so a few months ago, the Republicans shared a list of things that Democrats would be seeking if they won control of the House, because Dems have been asking for forever, and they were never given, they weren't given anything because Republicans had control of the House. So they literally called this a hell list. Do you want to hear some of the things that were on this list that Republicans wrote?
Please. This brings me so much joy.
They said that that Democrats would be seeking President Trump's tax returns.
Yep.
Trump's dealings with Russia,
mm-hmm.
Trump's family businesses,
mm-hmm.
James Comey's firing,
yep.
Trump's payment to Stormy Daniels, Trump's proposal for a transgender ban on the military,
love.
The travel ban,
mm-hmm.
family separation policy,
yep.
and hurricane response in Puerto Rico.
Love.
So at the end of it, once it was established that Democrats were going to take the House, the Dems kind of already came out and said, like, get those fucking tax returns ready. Those are going to be the first things that we go after.
Yep.
So it's very exciting, you guys, that we might And Trump is actually freaking out.
I love it.
He's actually freaking out about it. There was that whole thing about him kind of, like, screaming at Jim Acosta, that that journalist, during a White House press conference, because he's, like, melting down in real time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting.
Melting down. I love it.
So before we get into the good stuff, do you want to talk about kind of some of the defeats that people were a little upset about?
Please do.
Okay. So our lovely Beto O'Rourke. So Beto O'Rourke, who, of course, we all wanted to win the Senate seat against that fucking blobfish of a human being.
I know.
Ted Cruz. Who is actually a disgusting person.
I actually let it slip around a six-year-old that he's a Zodiac killer, and his mom, like, shot me. What? And like, it's a made-up character. It's fine.
Don't worry about it. But yeah, that guy is just like, walking. I don't even know. He's, like, the walking personification of, like, Jell-O. He's so gross.
There's nothing about him.
But less delicious than Jell-O. Just, like, plain gelatin.
Like, if you were to put, like, no flavoring
plain
into
Jell-O. Gelatin.
He's just wobbly.
Clear
he's just,
like, blah, blah, gelatin blah, 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 blah. With no real personality to speak of.
Yep.
But it's fucking Texas.
Yeah.
And so while, of course, we all wanted Beto O'Rourke to win, he was an advocate of, is an advocate of people of color. He, you know, he ran a very clean campaign. He raised his campaign finances without corporate help, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. And people were really jazzed about it. He did lose, but only by, like, barely anything. So Beto O'Rourke got 48.3 points and Ted Cruz 50.9.
Yeah, that's
so
close.
it was very close for Texas, which is like the reddest of any red state. So I really still see this, even though he didn't win, and it's sorely disappointing. I really do see this still as a win because it's such an advancement.
It's showing the Texas people,
right? They turned out for this, and it really mattered. And so I hope if you're listening and you're from Texas and you're feeling really despondent right now, your vote mattered. Please show up to vote next time.
Yeah.
Continue to vote.
It was so close. Like, we just had a few more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Don't feel like because you guys didn't win that you don't need to vote next time.
Yeah.
Please, please, please
continue
to show up to
Thank
vote.
Thank you.
People are talking about Beto running in 2020.
I know.
He has said he's not going to.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see about that.
The other one that was kind of a shitstorm, which is not over yet, was Stacey Abrams, who is running for governor in Georgia against Brian Kemp. And she did as of right now, she's lost to Brian Kemp 48.7 to 50.3, which is incredibly close, again in another red state. However, she is not conceding this race, nor should she concede this race, because this guy, Brian Kemp, he is the Secretary of State in Georgia. So okay. It is his job to oversee the elections.
Yeah.
So he was overseeing the elections that he was actively participating in.
Yeah.
And there has been blatant voter suppression, gerrymandering. He has pulled out all of the stops to try and
make it go his way.
Manipulate the votes.
Yeah.
And so she is not conceding yet until they've had a close examination.
Good.
Because the person who he was putting laws in place to try and suppress votes because he was the Secretary of State and he could do that.
Exactly.
So it was super fucking underhanded. And at no point should he be allowed to be in control of elections when he's participating in an election.
Oh, agreed.
That's not,
completely
agree. Not fair at all. So hopefully Stacey can pull it out. I don't know if she can, but fingers fucking crossed, because this guy cheated.
Yeah.
120%. There's been proof of that. So.
Should I tell you about some of the history making that went
Please.
On?
Please.
In Michigan, Rashida, I'm going to say her last name wrong. I apologize. Tlaib? T-L-A-I-B?
Right. I'm not sure either. I have it in my notes as well.
She became the first ever Muslim woman to be elected to the U.S. Congress. In Florida, voters passed Amendment 4, which restored the voting rights for people who were convicted of felonies. So it says 179% of Black Floridians. Did I add a 1 there?
Probably.
Like, what?
I don't think it's over 100%. But
so then it would be 79% of Black Floridians couldn't vote due to previous felony convictions, and 40% of those Black men will have their voting rights restored.
Yeah, nothing but voter suppression laws. Seriously, that's what that is.
In Virginia, Republican Barbara Comstock, beloved by the NRA, lost her congressional seat. In Key West, Terry Johnston became the first openly lesbian woman ever elected mayor in Florida, and she won by 66% of the vote.
Amazing.
In Colorado, Jared Polis became the first openly gay governor.
And also the first Jewish governor.
Love it.
And if you haven't seen the video of him introducing his partner as the first man of Colorado.
I haven't seen it!
Oh my, I am such a, like, I want to cry right now. Like, every time I think about watching these videos of these people talking about being the first this or that.
Yeah.
Because also, in addition to Rashida Tlaib, I think it's Tlaib, I'm not sure, of Michigan, who is the first Muslim woman to be elected in Congress, in this same election cycle, again, I'm going to say this wrong, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota is also another Muslim woman who has been voted into Congress.
Yep.
And watching her up there saying, I'm the first woman in hijab to be elected to Congress.
She lost to Jason Lewis, right?
She lost?
I mean, sorry, she won to Jason Lewis.
I'm not
Lewis
sure.
Lost. So my last one that I have is that Congressman Jason Lewis, who lamented not being able to call women sluts, lost to a woman. Oh, no,
you
this is Angie
piece of
Craig.
Shit.
He lost to Angie Craig in Minnesota. Yeah, you know, great. Texas elected two Latina congresswomen for the first time, Sylvia Garcia and Veronica Escobar.
Let that sink in, that Texas.
I know.
A deeply, a state we stole from Mexicans.
I know.
Just elected its first Mexicans. Like,
I mean, it was maybe first
Mexican women. Sorry. First Latina women, but still.
I know. In Kansas, Charisse Davids became the first Native American woman elected to Congress.
Dude, hold on.
And
pause.
She's also gay.
She's also gay. She's an ex-MMA fighter.
Yep.
She's from Kansas. That blew my mind.
I know.
As someone from Missouri, the fact that she could have flipped a Senate seat in Kansas, being a Native American woman and being gay, and she kissed her, I don't know if she's her wife or her partner, she kissed her, like, during her speech.
Yes! I love it.
Amazing.
I love it.
And, again, when we were just talking about how we essentially stole Texas from Mexicans, and how they're the first Latino women or Mexican women to be appointed to Congress.
Yeah.
These are our first, because there's another one of them, our first Native American women to join Congress. It's fucking ridiculous.
Well, and I was going to go on to Deb, I think it's Haaland? Yeah, she is part of the Pueblo Laguna, and she won a seat in the first district of New Mexico, which is where Keegan was born.
My birth state.
Yeah.
Amazing.
In Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley became the first black woman elected in Massachusetts Congress. So also in Massachusetts, an anti-discrimination bill was saved by voters, which will explicitly protect transgender people from discrimination in public spaces, which is amazing. I know.
My heart is so full.
I know. In New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez became the youngest woman ever elected in Congress at 29 years old.
And I feel useless.
I know!
Because she's crazy. A year older than me.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, my life means nothing. Okay.
A conservative district in Illinois elected Lauren Underwood, the youngest black woman running for Congress, and she served as an advisor to the Department of Health and Human Services under the Obama administration. Again in Kansas, Democrat Laura Kelly beat Trump-endorsed Kris Kobach. Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk, who refused to sign the marriage certificates for same-sex couples in Kentucky, lost her bid for re-election. Elwood Cottle Jr. won by 54% of the votes. Georgia's Lucy McBeth, a gun control activist whose son was shot and killed in 2012 by a racist motorist, said that his music was too loud, won a House seat in Georgia's 6th congressional district. It was her first time running for Congress, and she said earlier this year that she was inspired to run after witnessing the activism of the students in Parkland, Florida, who survived the tragic shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Amazing.
I'm going to cry.
I know. Democrat Tony Evans beat out Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Walker attacked public education, which resulted in teacher shortage in Wisconsin. And then, like I said earlier, GOP Congressman Jason Lewis, who lamented not being able to call women sluts, lost to a woman, Angie Craig, in Minnesota, my home state.
Hell yeah. And I had a lot of friends here in LA who were canvassing and working for Katie Hill, who was running for Congress, and she won, and she is the first bisexual member.
Love it.
Of Congress. So fantastic. You know what? Yes, we don't have control of the Senate, and that sucks, but I want people to understand that we now have some checks and balances where there weren't any.
Yep.
And that is huge, and it's a really big deal.
And just the history and everything that happened this week is so phenomenal.
And so we really need to kind of just, like, sit and bathe in that light right now. I think we really deserve to do that, because it's been so hard and difficult. And
we have to be able to see the good.
And to celebrate the victories, whether or not you think that they're small. You know, we, for the first time, have elected over 100 women.
Yeah.
All at once. And that's fantastic. You know, truly, the more women and the more women of color, especially, who step up in leadership roles in this country.
Yeah, the more intersectional our country is going to become.
Of course, and the better off. And the better off. Like, we cannot have a government for the people if it is not a government by the people.
I agree.
100%. So I am overflowing with joy.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, of course, I hope Stacey Abrams pulls through.
Me too.
I hope that Beto O'Rourke runs again, of course. Like, there are disappointments. But at the end of the day, you might not think it's a blue wave, but it's still a victory.
It is a huge victory.
Yeah,
there's
that's fantastic.
A lot of things to be excited about, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so do we want to kind of move into something sort of similarly related?
Yeah.
All right, so today. Yes, today. Yesterday. Okay. The day after the midterms, which was on Wednesday, Jeff Sessions was fired. It's kind of confusing because it's like he gave his letter of resignation.
Yeah.
But he gave it because he was asked to step down.
Right.
By the president. So that's kind of like, he wasn't fired, but he was kind of like, pushed, encouraged to step down. And Jeff Sessions is the attorney general. Jeff Beauregard Sessions, which, like, could you have a more fucking southern shitty name? Because he's super fucking racist. And he is super fucking racist, and he's a shit person.
Yeah.
However, this situation is kind of fucked because Trump has been saying for a while that he was going to fire Jeff Sessions, or Jeff Sessions is shitty and he's bad at his job and all these other things, because Jeff Sessions has been like, I'm not going to stop the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
And Trump didn't like that.
Yeah.
So Trump called for his resignation. I think it was very calculated for him to do it the day after the midterm, so yeah. that kind of got that out of the news cycle. I think that was his plan. So he usually, whenever the attorney general has to step down for whatever reason, gets fired or anything like that, which is very unusual. I don't know if an attorney general has ever really been fired, probably, but a long time.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, an attorney general ever has to leave. Usually the deputy attorney general, which in this case would be Rod Rosenstein, would step in and take their place.
Uh-huh.
That is not the case here.
Okay.
Trump is trying to replace Sessions with a loyalist, who had at one point openly questioned the validity of the Mueller investigation and had basically wrote an op-ed at one point saying that he thought the Mueller investigation was bullshit.
Yeah.
And his name is Matt Whitaker, and he is Jeff Sessions' former chief of staff. So it's not surprising that Trump would do something like this, but it's also so blatantly transparent that it's... It feels like he's just fucking grasping for, like, anything, because he knows now that Democrats have control of the House.
Yeah, he's in trouble.
There's a lot more oversight. Mm-hmm. So there is that. And the other thing that we should touch on very briefly is, guys, we need all of your collective power to pray, send good vibes, do a spell, do whatever it is you fucking do. But we need to keep Ruth Bader Ginsburg alive.
Stay alive, girl.
She was hospitalized this morning. And guys, we cannot afford to lose her.
No.
We cannot afford to lose her. I don't care whatever kind of black magic you have to whip out to save Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Pull out all the black magic.
Now is the fucking time. So just guys, thoughts, energy, vibes,
all
prayers, whatever you do, all the good stuff.
Send fairies, like,
please,
whatever you can.
Please, please, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I want to touch briefly on the lives that were lost this morning in the shooting in Thousand Oaks, California. The killer was a former, was it a Marine?
Yes.
And
he suffered PTSD.
Yeah. There's a lot that we could discuss with that. I tend to like to focus more on the people whose lives were lost.
I agree. I do think it's important, though, to address that this was a man who came back from war, quite obviously had PTSD, to the point where police were called to his house in April.
Yeah.
And they, for a disturbance, one disturbance or another, and they noticed that he was not mentally well. And in fact said that they thought he had PTSD, considered putting him on a psychiatric hold.
Yeah.
Didn't do that.
I think I read somewhere that he had been like, that they had looked into it and then they opted against
putting him on a psychiatric hold.
Yeah.
I think it's an important thing to touch on because, as we have said many fucking times, people who have health problems like this, and I'm not saying it's his fault, because of course it isn't.
Yeah.
But people who have problems like this should not be able to easily access guns. And at this moment, we don't know how he got his hands on this gun.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't his. Maybe he got it from someone else. But in general, it's just something that we need to know as a piece of the puzzle, as part of the story.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just realizing that on this list that I have, it's not telling me all 12. So let me read what I have and then see why I don't possibly have all 12 names here.
It just happened this morning. I'm not sure if all 12 names have been released yet.
Yeah, I have 7 names here. So I deeply apologize if I missed something.
I have the same list. I don't think all the names have been released yet at the time we're recording this.
Okay, so Cody Kaufman was 22. He was an athlete, umpire, and big brother who planned on joining the Army. Ron Helis, within minutes of the 911 call, Sergeant Ron Helis of the Ventura County Sheriff's Office was there to confront the shooter. When gunfire erupted, Helis was hit multiple times. Elena Housley was 18. She was a Pepperdine student, and her uncle, TV reporter Adam Housley, was also killed. Which, can you imagine? 2 in one family. My gosh. I mean, 1 is bad enough. Dan Manrique, who was 33. He was a former Marine, volunteer, and program manager. Justin Meek was 33. He was a recent grad of California Lutheran University and heroically saved lives, but was killed during the shooting. And then Noelle Sparks, who was 21, worked with children at Calvary Community Church in Westlake Village.
And I want to say that this all took place at a bar. I believe it's
the Borderline
Bar.
Yeah.
Anthony and I were just in Thousand Oaks. Like, we were literally like a mile away from where this happened. And the Borderline Bar, I'd been asked to go there many times with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Young people hang out there all the time. Mm-hmm. They have a very active college night. Which is, I think, why so many of the victims were young people, 18 mm-hmm. to 22. A lot of people go there even from L.A. Because yeah. I know people were like, well, it wasn't in L.A., but it's like a lot of...
It's really not far, you guys.
It's about close. 45 minutes. And, I've been to Thousand Oaks a bunch. Like I said, I was there last weekend.
Yeah.
And L.A. residents do go quite a lot because yeah. it's one of the only bars that does line dancing. So if you are into that, if you like country music and things like that, you might be interested yeah. in going there. And it's a bar where you can go if you're under 21 as yeah. well. So it was really heartbreaking. This morning, I woke up to a bunch of tests.
That was literally the first thing was like, oh, did you hear about yesterday? Like, no good morning, well, no nothing. This morning, there was, yeah. I was like, great.
I woke up to texts from my family, like, yeah. asking if I was okay.
Yeah.
Because people who don't live here don't understand yeah. how far away that is or right. whatever. And it was also just really, really heartbreaking. I watched some of the news coverage and, like, the parents finding yeah. out that their... One man, he had been monitoring his son's phone, tracking it. He was tracking it.
Yeah.
And he said to the camera, he's like, his phone isn't moving, and that's what's concerning us right now. I'm hoping he just got out and he's missing and he dropped his phone or something. Yeah. And that wasn't the case. God. It was horrific. This guy showed up. He shot the security guard.
Yep.
He shot the hostess. And then he threw in, and this is what scared me the most when I was in bed reading about this morning, he threw in smoke bombs.
Yeah.
So... these poor people in this bar were so disoriented.
Yeah.
And they couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
And that's so fucking scary.
And then he just went in and wreaked terror.
It's so scary. And it's so hard to be like, it was so close to home. And I was just saying, like, we are due for something in LA. Nothing massive has happened in LA in a while. And,
it is honestly horrifying.
And you could go anywhere. There is no protection. There's no protecting yourself. Safe. Short of never leaving your home, there is nowhere that's safe. I go out all the time. I try yeah. new bars. I go to restaurants. I go to movie theaters.
Of course,
because I'm living my life. And yeah. like, these people did not go to that bar at all having any inclination that something yep. like that could happen to them.
I know.
And that's so scary and sad. So,
yeah, I mean, if you've listened to our show for a while, you know, our thoughts, we dedicated a whole mini episode to gun violence after Parkland. And, if you haven't listened, go back and take a listen to really hear all of our thoughts involving gun control and our pain that we've been feeling within. I mean, especially the last year we've been doing this podcast and talking about it and sharing it with each other. So you can have a really good understanding about the way that we feel when these things come up again. It's just very,
yeah,
very hard for us to talk about.
I mean, I think it's, you know, the entire country is just like, I don't even know what my parents would feel or my friends would feel or what it would be like at this point if... I feel like it's almost bound to happen that someone I know is going to die by gun violence.
That is exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying because literally nowhere is safe.
Yeah.
And it's like you have to just take every life that you come across that you care about and cherish it so entirely because you really don't know at this point
There were people at this bar who were, all, because it's kind of the same demographic, who were at... the country music festival in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they talk about that. And you know, the one person that I saw that they talked to who had both of those experiences, he lived through both of them. But can you fucking imagine?
No, the
you
guilt wouldn't feel, and the...
And you wouldn't feel safe ever again going anywhere.
Twice?
For it to happen to you twice.
No.
12 people, dude. There's like, no that's way. It's a lot.
That's a you lot. Know? For going into a bar, 12 people is... a lot.
You know, and to before that have survived something where it was the greatest death toll
yeah.
of any mass shooting,
yeah.
you know, it's like, it's just really hard and sad and difficult. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what else there is to say about that.
Yeah.
Well, we're sorry to kind of have our last story be on a down note. I know you have something you want to talk about.
Yeah, I have like a semi-happy thing.
And then
thing.
I have a story we got emailed, so...
Okay, perfect.
We can do both of those things.
All right, I will cut this quick. I was very, very fortunate last night that I was invited to go see the new movie, Pimp. It stars Kiki Palmer. It stars my friend Haley, who was in the show.
What's her last name?
Ram, sorry.
Haley Ram?
Haley Ram.
Okay.
And then also it starred, what is his name? Eddie Gathegi, who is an X-Men, and Vanessa Morgan, who is from Riverdale. It got a really good review in The Hollywood Reporter, so I'm going to read kind of their little, like, opening paragraph there. It says, fans of the Blaxploitation era will get a nostalgic kick out of Christine Croco's feature directorial debut starring Kiki Palmer, a long way removed from her childhood role in Aquila and the Bee, in the title role Pimp.
I love her.
I do too.
She's amazing.
As an engrossing melodrama that could easily have played to an enthusiastic grindhouse audiences of the 1970s. Executive produced by Lee Daniels, the film manages simultaneously to feel feminist and utterly retrograde while proving fast-paced and entertaining. The director and screenwriter is a member of the LGBTQ+ community, tells a really hauntingly beautiful story of a mixed-race lesbian couple who began as best friends in the Bronx. So Kiki Palmer's character was raised by a pimp. Her mother was one of the sex workers. Her father dies at a very young age, and so she kind of has to take over the family business. Her mother is a drug addict. It's very, like, everything awful that you can think of in the world, but she has this one girl who's always been in her life. And when things get rough, her girlfriend, who's played by my friend Haley, is like, I'm gonna start selling myself for us to be able to have enough money to live. And then she kind of gets a little money hungry, and she brings in this other girl, and she took this girl away from this guy played by Eddie Gathegi, and he is horrifying. He is so misogynistic and evil and, like, gross in this movie, and he's so nice in real life, which made me so happy because I was like, oh, fuck this guy.
I don't want to meet you.
I know. I was like, yeah. Fuck this guy, and he was so nice. And it was so good. And the ending, I will not spoil, but it was so beautiful. I was really glad that I got to be a part of it. I was a little disappointed that the director is kind of shitty.
Really?
She's a little problematic.
Okay.
So that was the one thing that I found out afterwards that I was a little bit frustrated by. But the fact that Lee Daniels came on, you would know him from Empire, Star, and Precious, and The Butler. He added such, like, a gorgeous, like, authenticity to the
movie,
I feel.
Right. It kind of makes me feel better about it because I know the director is a white woman and these are black stories being told for the most part, and that always makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Well, and that's something that my friend asked me about, too, which I felt really impressed by, that mm-hmm. is something that she definitely had in the forefront of her mind, like, what do you think about this? And I think that's an important conversation to be had.
Right. I mean, it reassures me a lot that Lee Daniels would step in because I feel like he would take at least a little bit of control over that.
I think he took a lot of control over it. He would never,
I don't believe, sign on to something that he deemed to be super demeaning. So
yeah. When I was telling you earlier, too, I feel like the story was more so written. Haley was the only, like, white character. There was, like, mm-hmm. another, like, kind of secondary character. But it was a very predominantly black cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, if anything, the director/writer was probably speaking more from her reality.
From the reality of
Haley's character, Nikki's world. But it's so good. Like, I have to talk about it because it's a little tiny indie film. It's done by women and people of color. It is, like, LGBTQ+ positive. There's a lot of kind of jarring. There's one scene that I had to look away. There's a lot of language that is very harsh. We are dealing with someone who's working as a pimp. So there's gun violence and a lot of sex and things like that. So if that's something you're sensitive to. But I really enjoyed it. So I wanted to share it with you guys. And you guys can decide, you know, whether or not you want to see it or not. But I really loved it. And it was a really great experience for
me. Awesome.
So you guys should check it out.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to check it out whenever it comes out.
Yes. It's going to be at Universal Studios tomorrow, I think.
Oh, so great.
Today, when the episode will come out.
Theater, like,
I think it's gonna be at City Walk.
Okay,
I'll look it up. I'll post something tomorrow.
Okay, so we have a email that was sent in by a listener. It says, "Hi, I love you guys and your podcast, and I generally agree with like 98% of the things you say." All right, that's cool. 98% is pretty good.
That's really good.
I'm willing
to
take
that. That's still like an A.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
It's still a solid A. Okay. Yeah. That said, I know, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I wanted to let you know, A, Maori are generally understood as Polynesian, which I thought, but I didn't want to say that during our cultural appropriation episode because I wasn't 100% and I didn't want to step outside my bounds. B, it's best when speaking about indigenous peoples to not refer to them as of X country or X country's indigenous group.
Okay.
Noticed you guys said Maori of New Zealand instead of in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
Which totally... I never would have known, but now that she mentions it, makes so much sense.
It makes complete sense.
Because saying Maori of New Zealand, it's like they're not of there, they were there first.
Exactly.
So for you to kind of like be like they're of this place is disrespectful. So I understand that.
I completely agree.
Generally, when speaking about countries created through colonialism without respecting the original culture's boundaries of the indigenous peoples on those lands, it's best to work hard not to sound paternalistic.
Yeah.
Wow. I know you guys are not at all disrespectful. It's just phrasing particularities.
Definitely.
And finally, C, really, really try to avoid saying Eskimo because it's as derogatory as the word you bleeped out.
Yeah, that was something that I kind of, like, grappled with as well. And again, I'm completely still learning a lot of those things.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, growing up, it was not seen as a big deal, so...
To us, where we come from. Yes, of course.
Exactly. So, thank you for bringing that to our attention because it's not anything that I ever would have thought about.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, it's what we talked about in that episode where when you know better, you do better.
Exactly.
And it's really helpful to have people like this calling us in on these things to, you know, very gently and nicely tell us where we maybe have misstepped. And that's really helpful.
Yeah.
And I talked to her a little bit on Twitter today, and she was like, I really hope I didn't come across sounding mean.
No,
that's not at all
what
I wanted.
It's just very informative.
No.
And it's something that's going to be helping us moving forward.
Absolutely.
Knowing how to better censor ourselves in our episodes and not make anybody feel upset, because the whole point of this is to make people feel welcomed and accepted. So
right. I wouldn't want to. And we want to understand everyone else's perspective.
Exactly.
And so it's really helpful to know where people come from on that. So she continues, your episode on cultural appropriation regardless was amazing and important to me to hear those stories. As an Algonquin person who passes as white about 80% of the time, I've had so many wild mix-ups with cultural appropriation and racism. I've had people talk to me or near me about how Indigenous people in Canada are whiny and are using our history, LOL, it's not history when it's still happening, to make gains. I've had people get angry at me for wearing my jewelry that I've bought at powwows and for braids because they don't know that it's my culture.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people ask to see my status card as proof of my indigeneity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that's how that's said.
Yeah.
So when I speak about cultural appropriation, I speak about it from the perspectives of both the accused and the accuser, for lack of better terms. The most obvious example is when a girl showed up to my house in a sexy Indian costume for my Halloween party and then asked me to set her up with my friend. This was 2015. This was after the Victoria's Secret fashion show and Coachella conversations. She had no excuse.
Nope.
Anyway, I have many stories about my experience as an Indigenous woman in Canada. It's wild and awful. If you're interested in those stories, I'd be happy to share, but this is long now. I've got the rage, and I'm glad to hear it from others.
Yay!
Thank you so much for submitting that. Yes, we're 100% interested in hearing your other stories.
100%.
I think people do need, they need to hear these stories from
the source,
the people who are affected by it.
Exactly.
Because when you say you are negatively affected by a quote-unquote sexy Indian costume that someone wore into your home, I think people will hear and receive that in a way that's different than if Madigan or I ever said something like that.
Exactly.
So please do send us your stories. If you are listening to this and you have similar stories, please also send us your stories.
Yeah, and thank you so much again for bringing up ways that we can improve our language when we're on the show. It's absolutely something that we really, really try to do our best. But again, we're still learning. We're not perfect. So for all of the emails that we've ever gotten with people who kind of correct us, like, you're all so nice and wonderful.
We have never... I mean, other than trolls on Instagram,
yeah,
to our email, we have never had anyone be rude.
Because they actually listen to the show.
Right.
There's people on Instagram who, like, don't get what we are.
Because they understand that, like, we want to do better.
Yes.
We are constantly working to do better. We want to do the best that we can.
I agree.
If there's anything that we say or do that is insensitive, please let us in on that and we will work to correct it. I guarantee you it sticks in my brain.
Oh, same.
And I try to make a mental note of those things. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. So you guys, if you have any other, if you have coming out stories, if you have sister solidarity stories, if you have anything that you want to share with us, you can shoot us an email at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. Show up on Instagram. That's where everything goes down, at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. You can go on Twitter. Our username there is YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. We have a group and a business page. You can find us pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts. So if you're not happy with where you're listening right now, you can find somewhere else.
Listen on Radio Public.
I mean, if you listen on Radio Public...
We get like 2 cents per listen.
I was going to say, we'll get like a couple pennies. It's cool.
It's great.
It's fine. It's free for you. It helps us. It's
and don't forget to continue to send us reviews,
to
rate.
Thank you.
Please subscribe or just tell a friend.
Yeah.
All of those things are super, super helpful for us.
Word of mouth is very valuable with us. Really, really appreciate it. I think other than that, I think we've kind of covered everything.
Oh, hey guys, by the way, because this is the first episode that's coming
out
after.
Holy shit, you guys. Keegan's engaged.
I got engaged. So
what
I feel like
fuck?
We should address that just because we'll be talking about it later.
I was going to bring it up immediately. I was going to bring it up the first thing. Guys, Keegan is getting married.
Yeah, so that Anthony guy that I talk about all the time, we're going to get married. I'm sure there are episodes on whether or not marriage is feminist and or the marriage industrial complex in our future.
Yes, but girl. We're going to do it.
But for now, I just thought I would let you listeners in on that.
I was just like, I was texting Keegan. I'm like, oh my God, you got engaged this weekend. Guess what I did? I got a butt tattoo.
Hell fucking yes.
This is where we are in our lives.
I'm not opposed to getting a butt tattoo.
No, I know. But I'm like so excited about my ass tattoo. And you're like, I'm getting engaged. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's so much better.
I mean, who's to say one is better than the other?
Yours is just so
They're
much
both
better.
Great.
You guys, I'm so fucking happy. Anthony is the best person in the world. Keegan is the best person in the world. They're getting married. They're going to be the best people in the world. Everything is right.
We're going to have a fun ass wedding. Ugh. We'll definitely take, you know, pictures and videos. Madigan and I will together at the wedding. So
I'm so excited. So yes, we cannot forget that piece of exciting news. And with that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.